Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Buck Stops Here. The 1971 war has been described as being perhaps India's finest hour, certainly the finest hour of the Indian Armed Forces. But generations of Indians have perhaps today learnt about the war from textbooks, perhaps from a few stories. The actual nuance of the battles themselves, the stories of some of our military stalwarts, has often been forgotten. What we've tried to do at NDTV for many years is to ensure that the stories of our war veterans are never forgotten. And this program is part of this continuing effort. As a group of veterans goes back to Bangladesh to relive their memories in the battlegrounds where they fought 46 years back, we thought we'd bring them all together. Two officers of the Army, one of the Air Force, and one of the Navy, all of whom had played a very, very important role way back then in 1971. I'm very privileged to introduce our panelists, Lieutenant General Jai Bhagwan Singh Yadav, with 5x11 Gurkha rifles. He took part in several battles. The Battle of Bogra was certainly one of the highlights. Wing Commander Devinderjeet Singh Clare, not only did he fight the war as a fighter pilot flying Nats, his father also participated in the war as a very well-known soldier of the Army, an officer of the Army on the ground. They were both fighting together at the same time. Commodore Ravindranath Sharma was on board INS Vikrant. He saw some of the most difficult moments, the most tense moments, as we deployed fighter aircraft off the deck of India's only aircraft carrier at the time. And he'll tell us a little bit about that. And Major Chandrakant Singh of Four Guards has some unique stories about his interactions with the Mukti Bahini and India's role over there. But General, let me come to you first. Your soldiers were responsible, and you were commanding this small detachment, of getting control of an entire battalion. How did that happen, sir?
You see, the enemy was putting up great resistance after the Battle of Hilli, and he was determined not to allow us to capture Bogra, which was one of the strategic objectives of the India's southwestern force. We had been tasked to capture Bogra as early as possible. So at the Battle of Govind Ganj, we made a detour of 70 kilometers on amphibian tanks.
PT-76 tanks.
Yes, PT-76. These are amphibian tanks. They can negotiate rivers, marshes, nalas. Yep. And we landed up behind the enemy battalion and attacked them from the rear. They were totally surprised, although the battle was very ferocious, but the resistance collapsed very fast. And in the process, I, as a company commander with Major Mehra of the 69 Cavalry, captured three Pakistani tanks, six guns, 17 trucks of ammunition, and about 200 people who were running away from the defenses.
You were on a mission. You were flying Nats from Damdam and Kalaikunda as well. And you were on your way back when suddenly you were told that somebody on the ground in the army was in trouble. What did you do?
Well, the FSC called up to say that, Clare, your namesake is burning in an APC. So Don Lazarus, my leader, and I, we were coming back. We had full ammunition, looking for targets of opportunity. So we went in to this particular, save this objective, which was the APC burning in the middle of the river.
An armored personnel carrier.
An armored personnel carrier, which, unfortunately, 7th Punjab had trained with us in Kalaikunda in the waters next door at Jhargram. So we were a little intimate with them, not because we were clear, but because they were Army and we were Air Force, and we got along pretty well there. But we went in for this thing, and we found that there was a machine gun post which was firing at them. The tank was burning, their APC was burning, and the troops couldn't get out. So Don and I, we carried out with our front gun attacks, and on the second attack, we got them nice and proper, but I got hit by enemy ground fire. I took a bullet right through my engine. It was a pleasure to hear on RT that Clare managed to get out of the aircraft. His back was completely on fire. They burnt. He's alive today, lives in Defence Colony, and comes to Delhi golf gymkhana.
So you saved his life.
And, well, if you can call it that way.
Saved his life, potentially saved his life, don't be modest. And then in the process, your aircraft was hit. You ultimately lost the engine, right?
We just lost an engine, but the airframe was intact. You just take out an engine, put another one in.
Right, no, but that happened later on. So you had to get back, and you had the option of ejecting.
Yes, I was asked to eject by my fighter controller, by my leader, because the aircraft was behaving like a rodeo horse. And the fuel gauge was just going down like a char, well, going off. They had diverted me to Jessore. And if I had landed, I would have been the first Indian Air Force pilot to land at Jessore.
Because it had just recently been captured.
It had just been evacuated by the Pakistanis.
I see.
But right in front on the runway were huge, big boulders. So I yelled out, runway is blocked. So my fighter controller, Flight Lieutenant Radhakrishna, asked me to pull up and head straight for Dum Dum. And he brought me in for a direct finals on a reciprocal runway. Unfortunately, Dum Dum had smog, which drifted from Howrah. So when you're down, when your chips are down, everything doesn't work your way at all. So smog over Dum Dum, no sight of the runway, coming in with absolutely no fuel, fuel gauge more or less reading zero. When suddenly I saw an aircraft going around on the normal runway, which was friend Velankar. But I put the aircraft nose down, I know that the runway must be right below me. Made contact when the engine conked out. And I landed.
So your engine went dead as you touched down?
No.
The timing was just
my
before?
Engine went dead when I was above the runway.
Right. Well, you're here to tell us that story. Let me come to you next, get the Navy also in on this. The Vikrant, the pride of the Indian Navy, our first aircraft carrier. You deployed Seahawk and Alize aircraft off the decks of the Vikrant at that time. So the fighters went in and then there was silence. What was the mood on the deck of the ship, sir, as you were waiting for the pilots to return after their strafing operations?
Well, the mood was one of suspense and a lot of tension, because we really didn't know what kind of opposition these fighters would, the aircraft from Vikrant, mainly the Seahawks, would encounter. So they had gone to carry out an attack at Chittagong Harbor, the installations at port installations at Chittagong. And I said, I think there's about four or five aircraft which had taken off, led by Lieutenant Commander S.K. Gupta, or Gigi Gupta as he was affectionately known. Now, these were officers who were, of course, very well loved and all that on board. And what we were really anxious about is that would they all come back? Would anyone be shot down, or what would happen? What kind of opposition or air defense would they encounter? So for about an hour that they were airborne, there was pin drop silence on board. Nobody was talking, and we were just waiting, keeping our fingers crossed. But after about an hour, the first aircraft was sighted coming back, and then, of course, the whole lot. And they all came back and landed on board, and there was great jubilation on board when they recounted that they'd been able to carry out successful attacks. And Commander Gupta was then lifted off by the air crew on their shoulders and sort of taken around the ship with garlands and things. And thereafter, we became more sure of ourselves in further attacks. And many more attacks were, of course, carried out, not only in Chittagong, but Cox's Bazar, Khulna, Chalna, etc.
Major Ziaur Rahman was somebody who you interacted with personally. He shared your tent. He shared a meal and a drink with you, perhaps all too frequently. Tell us about that interaction with somebody who came to define the Mukti Bahini and the freedom movement in what was then East Pakistan.
See, Zia was in, second in command of 6th East Bengal Regiment, which was located in Chittagong. And he's the one who went on the 25th or 26th of March, went on radio East Pakistan and declared an open rebellion, armed rebellion against the thing, because Mujib had been arrested the day before. On the 3rd of April, he crossed over to the Indian border from a East Pakistan town called Ramgarh. and its counterpart, which is divided by about a 50-meter wide stream of the Feni, was Sabrum, where we were located. For the next 3 months, he was with my battalion.
And you shared a tent?
Yeah, we shared a tent.
What kind of person was he? How was it like to engage him?
This is interesting because everybody's observation was that he was so deeply involved with Pakistan that he suffered from, and I wouldn't say not suffering, but he was too emotionally involved. And it gave the impression that he was a withdrawn personality. This was perhaps, we didn't know it at that time, but he was aware that his wife was at that time taken in custody by the Pakistan Army. She was taken in custody by a person called Lieutenant Colonel Mohammad Taj, who was the chief of the East Pakistan, Eastern Command of the Pakistan Army. And she was there till the end of the war.
Right, so the very tense moments for him.
For him.
But I must ask you this, Wing Commander, your dad wrote a famous letter to a very brave Pakistani commander who was inside the Jamalpur fort, saying that, look, you know, you're surrounded. Tell us a little bit about that exchange between your old man and that Pakistani soldier, how that played out.
My father, Brigadier Hardev Clare, had Bulbul Barar and the Marathas with him at that particular time, and they had surrounded Jamalpur when the enemy was there. So my father wrote a letter and sent it with a messenger, a Mukti Bahini man, to the Jamalpur fortress, Commander Colonel Sultan from 31 Baluch. Surrender or you will die. I have surrounded you from all round, and I have Muktis with me waiting to take you on. I have asked for 40 sorties tomorrow of napalm. Why do you want bloodshed on your hands? I will treat you well if you put up the flag. You know, and look after my messenger who I'm sending you. Sultan was a very brave and a fantastic officer. He wrote back to my father saying, thank you for your letter. I hope your messenger was looked after and enjoyed his tea. Give my love to the Muktis. What are you talking about, 40 sorties? You can ask for many more. I shall not surrender. I'd like to see you with a pen instead of the sten you have so much mastery on. And he sent a bullet back to my dad. That was a very famous exchange of letter between two enemies facing each other. But a brave fighter he was. And he managed to escape from the Battle of Jamalpur. And later on, I was present when they both had a confrontation once again when he was a prisoner of war. He was very nervous when he came to meet my dad. But my father made him sit down and said, now, why didn't you take heed of my letter? You've had so many people who died. He had over 300 troops killed that day. He says, I didn't believe you one bit, but I admired your diction and I liked the way you wrote, and I knew that you were a DS from Staff College.
General, I asked you a question earlier. You didn't answer me directly. The bravery of your Gurkha soldiers in silencing a group of Pakistani soldiers who they encountered. A specific question, sir, what did they do?
As far as Gurkhas are concerned, they are natural fighters. They are also very ferocious fighters, and fighting comes to them very naturally. During the Battle of Govindganj, as well as Battle of Mahastan, and later at Bogra, there were innumerable incidences of bravery on their part. And I remember my Subedar Tamang, we were in this block, and the enemy was carrying out reinforcements of his forward localities without any inkling of this block. And this JCO, when this group of reinforcement was going, he realized that if he shot them, they would be alerted. So he took out his kukri and slaughtered all of them.
Four of them, right?
Four of them with one stroke, and laid down those bodies in a neat row and reported to me that he has done this. And I was very, very happy, and I admired his bravery and his act and presence of mind.
Yeah.
Similarly, during the Battle of Bogra, when one of my Sipahi Man Bahadur Limbu, he attacked a Pakistani who was blocking our advance, and he got shot up in his stomach. And this boy wouldn't give up, and he kept on charging the enemy till he collapsed. Unfortunately, he bled to death the whole day because we were not in a position to retrieve him, and it was a sad thing for all of us to see him bleeding the whole day, and we were unable to retrieve his body because of the Pakistani stubborn resistance and very accurate fire. So there were such many brave acts on part of our soldiers, particularly my battalion.
Commodore, the Pakistani submarine, which was ultimately sunk, or perhaps got destroyed by itself because of an accident, the Ghazi, was obviously trailing the Vikrant. You would have known through intelligence intercepts that she was there somewhere. Was this a constant factor in your mind that we need to be alert to this very formidable threat?
Yes, of course it was. We always knew that as far as the Pakistan Navy is concerned, the prime target was Vikrant, and they were to go all out to try and attack the Vikrant. So apart from the anti-submarine measures which one takes, one of the things I think which has not really been highlighted is the fact that we had ordered all the ships on the Eastern Front, and particularly the ones which were with Vikrant, including the Vikrant, not to make any transmissions at sea. So there was complete radio silence at sea so that the signals could not be picked up. And Pakistan had a network of direction finding stations which would be able to perhaps pinpoint the position of Vikrant. I think, and there was also a policy which was carried out by the Eastern Naval Command in sending out dummy messages to try and deceive Pakistan into believing that our forces were not exactly where they were, but at some other place. All these factors, I think, succeeded fully because the Ghazi was always behind us.
Right.
I mean, when Vikrant was in Vishakhapatnam, the Ghazi was probably at Madras. Subsequently, by the time Ghazi came to Vishakhapatnam, we were already in the Andaman and Nicobar Islands, at the northernmost island of Port Cornwallis, and that is when Ghazi sank. So we were always ahead, and we were fully aware that this is what is going to happen, and we were taking adequate steps to ensure that it doesn't cause any harm to Vikrant.
A lot of this, General, would have to do with the ethos of the army, where officers lead from the front. That's the way it has been. That is the way it will always remain. How was that ethos built into you when you were a young officer in 71? Not when you became a general and coached others on this ethos. How did that impact you when you went to war, that you have to be in the front, even if you took a bullet?
You see, the uniqueness of the Indian Army is that its leadership is of very high quality. Right from the day we enter the National Defense Academy or Indian Military Academy, we are taught that the nation and our army is above self. So that ethos and that tradition imbibes in us a unique quality of leading from the front. And that is why, as the Major has mentioned, the ratio of casualties of officers is always very high compared to the other ranks. And because of this unique tradition or this uniqueness in the leadership of the Indian Army, the victories have been always because of this factor.
Yeah.
So I would say that it's the tradition. And as he mentioned, the izzat of the unit is very important for us. And a jawan to an officer will do anything to save the izzat of his battalion or his regiment.
Wing Commander, last question to you. Just going back to what you had told us a little while earlier on. So the commander of the Jamalpur fortress had surrendered and he gave a couple of letters.
No.
Okay, this was somebody else.
It was the brigade commander who was captured.
Okay, so it was the brigade commander who was captured.
And he was the first senior brigade.
And you met him?
And he was brought to Dum Dum, and we were coming back after our R&R in the evening from our mess, and he spotted my name, Claire, on my flying overall, and he said, Claire, and I heard somebody saying Claire. I turned around, and there in the in a army jonga was an officer escorted by CMP and officers, and I looked at him. I said, yes. Then I came closer. I saw a brigadier's. So I saluted him. I said, hello, sir. And then I realized he's not from our army. But that sir came naturally because that's how we have been brought up, from the NDA and everywhere else. So I said, yes, you know me? He said, no, I surrendered to your dad this morning. I had heard that the general had blown up on a mine and had lost his feet. It was a misreporting where General Gill had blown up with my father on a mine and lost the soles of his feet.
Right.
My father had gone up on the anti-tank mine and landed back, and it hurt his knees and his back and had taken a foss. So when he told me that my father was alive and on his feet, I was very thrilled. I said, what can I do for you? Would you like to have a drink? He said, no, I can't do that. But will you be kind enough to post these two letters for me? So I said, sure. Then I hesitated. He said, you can read them. There's nothing secret in it. It's to my wife and my children to tell them that I'm alive. As a general, your brigadier, you brought me news of my dad. I will definitely do it.
And you did.
And I went across. We had a Red Cross plane that used to land there, whose co-pilot was a Pakistani of aviation or Pakistan Airways. I gave it to him. He said, do me a favor. Give these letters posted in Karachi, or in, when you get back to Pakistan. They were carrying aid to Bangladesh. Drop the aid and go back for refueling and carry on further. So I thought I'd done
a good job. So despite the deaths and despite the battles, there is that professional respect among men in uniform. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure speaking to all of you. And so there you have it. A small snapshot in about 20-25 minutes on the moment which I'm sure all of these soldiers would say was the definitive moment of their lives in uniform, when they fought a war, and that too, the greatest war that independent India has fought. Thank you very much for being with us.